President Biden sees net zero emissions in our future, but the plan relies on some magic. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Carbon capture is the talk of the climate scene right now. Technology that removes planet-warming carbon dioxide from the air and sequesters it in the Earth. On Earth Day, President Biden laid out a vision of net zero emissions by 2050 that relies in large part on carbon removal. Also last week, Elon Musk officially launched a $100 million XPRIZE to fund carbon capture tech. Australia plans to spend more than $400 million on it, and so on. But climate scientists say carbon capture risks making us think we can just keep emitting all we want. James Dyke is a senior lecturer in global systems at the University of Exeter, who recently wrote about this in The Conversation. He says there's another big problem with carbon capture and storage.
The technology does not exist. And that sounds like a very startling statement, because surely it does, right? I mean, if we are literally banking our civilization, surely we're doing that on the basis of well-researched, well-established, scalable technologies. And I know when I talk to people, they're very surprised to learn that the ideas of net zero, the ideas of carbon dioxide removal, were not generated by scientists or engineers. The ideas behind direct capture were actually kind of invented in this climate economic modeling policy context. And they've, for years, if not decades, served as a placeholder for future technological solutions that will somehow produce the required negative flux of carbon out of the atmosphere into either the soils, into trees, into geological reservoir. And none of these things exist at scale.
I mean, we're having now increasing policy conversations. The oil and gas industry is saying, let's definitely put $100 billion into carbon capture technology. Should we stop all that work right now, in your view?
There will be some role for carbon capture and storage, absolutely. But if you look at the example of carbon capture storage for coal, it was a disaster. It's never worked. You start having to put scrubbers on chimneys and then have to pipe it and compress it and develop geological storage sites. It becomes far too expensive. So really, the solution is not to try to continue humanity's addictions with fossil fuels. It's to invest in the green technologies that we need to be able to transition away from them completely. So that's renewables, wind, wave, solar, for example.
And that ultimately takes policy. Right?
Yes. You know, we can all have good lives. We just need to emit an awful less carbon dioxide, which means we might need to change patterns of consumption, patterns of travel, maybe some of the things that we eat. It's a potentially fundamental reworking of our industrialized societies. Now, that sounds very scary, but through that, we can address an awful lot of the other kind of social challenges or social problems that we currently face. For example, you know, widening inequality, food and fuel poverty. So political will is absolutely crucial. But if you're going to say that, you need to get much, much more engaged about how that political will is going to get involved.
On a relative scale, how worried or optimistic would you say you are?
I'm perennially optimistic, right? But I don't want to be delusional, and I can't fabricate solutions out of thin air, which is literally what we're proposing to do with lots of these net zero policies. We have to look at them and we have to assess them in a very sober and critical light. Now, some people say that I'm optimistic and I'm idealistic, because I actually think we can undertake the kind of changes to our societies, to our economic systems, maybe change our political systems, which should be required in order to do the necessary decarbonisation. So they say, I'm just being unrealistic. But these are the very same people who essentially invent carbon unicorns sometime around in the middle of this century that's going to sequester tens of billions of carbon dioxide from the Earth's atmosphere with very, very little evidence. Now, I think I'm actually much more realistic. I think my optimism is based on the inherent properties of people, our ability to self-organise, our ability to support, help one another. We're a tremendously caring and altruistic species. I know it's hard to believe sometimes, right? But, you know, the reason there are that bad things happen in the news is because that is by far and away the minority of how humans behave. We largely get along. You know, there are cities of tens of millions of people and it largely works. We can largely cooperate, work together to solve these kind of problems. And we've done it, you know, since we started farming 13,000 years ago. Obviously, the challenge is much, much larger now, but I certainly think it's within us. It's certainly within us in the terms of innovation, of our social systems, our economic systems and political systems. That's where the innovation is. We've got to stop deluding ourselves that the innovation is going to be some kind of magical technological solution, because in effect, that's just stopping us doing the hard work that's required right now.
Unicorns, I love it. I know that some technologist is going to hear this and go, I see what you're saying. We should just pump the carbon into space.
Somebody, I remember having a chat with somebody saying, yeah, but what if we just convert it to microwave radiation and beam it to the moon? And well, you know, thermodynamically that might work, but yeah. And but, you know, there is this sense of you're kind of crushing people's dreams. Yeah. You know, they you want to believe that we're going to fix this. You want to believe in this optimistic, bright, shiny, technologically advanced future. And when you come back with a solution which is about, you know, maybe citizens' assemblies or maybe listening to people or trying to broaden out the climate policy context, that's boring, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not SpaceX or Teslas or shiny suits and space stations and people living on Mars. So I completely get how you can be so invested in these kind of technological solution space.
James Dyke is a senior lecturer in global systems at the University of Exeter. And now for some related links. We've got a link to Dyke's piece, which he co-wrote with two other scientists over at marketplacetech.org, and a link to the XPRIZE page, which, I mean, I guess I'm surprised that Elon Musk himself hasn't suggested pumping the carbon into space, but maybe I should give it time. There's a BBC piece on direct air capture tech at our website and how it would work and how much it might cost. The piece quotes one paper that says, in order to keep up with current carbon dioxide emissions, the world would need to build something like 30,000 large-scale plants capturing carbon from the air, and that each plant would cost up to $500 million to build, for a total of around $15 trillion all in. Totally doable to save the planet, most likely, but then you'd need massive amounts of solvents to absorb the carbon dioxide, more than the entire annual supply of one particular chemical, according to the story. And you would also need about a sixth of the total energy in the world to run the plants, so much that they'd have to be powered by gas, which I guess is why you can see why ExxonMobil, as I mentioned, is ready to sink $100 billion into this idea, as long as, reportedly, it can get tax breaks and other potential subsidies, including a price on carbon that would make the technology profitable. For some other context, the ExxonMobil plan would remove 50 million tons of carbon dioxide per year by 2030, which sounds like a lot. But here's a little math trick I learned recently from Bill Gates's new climate book, which is that we humans emit 51 billion tons of carbon dioxide every year. So in exchange for tax breaks and subsidies and the right to keep doing fossil fuel extraction and burning, ExxonMobil is offering to start capturing just under 0.1% of the world's emissions 9 years from now. Now, I should note here that Bill Gates himself is also an investor in carbon capture technologies, and some of his environmental critics have argued that he should have more faith and maybe invest more in renewable energy solutions and societal change. But at least I learned that good math trick, which is something to think about. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.